Okay, my guest on Podcasting Him Softly this week is none other than Paul Power. He's a storyboard artist, actor, animator, illustrator. He's worked with some of the biggest, baddest, brightest, and most wonderful Hollywood can offer. And it is very exciting to have him on the show. Paul, thank you for being on Podcasting Him Softly.
You're very welcome, Ken.
Well, my first question is, you came to all this through comics was your first passion, yes?
Well, it was sort of at the same time, really, yeah, but comics were my first passion.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah. And that's how you came. Obviously, all the other things that you do, you've done illustration, you've done work for commercials, you've done album covers, you've done all that kind of thing as well, yeah?
Yeah, whatever pays the rent. That's how I looked at it.
Whatever pays the rent.
Yeah.
I listened to another interview that you did recently, and what surprised me out of a lot of people that work in the business is you seem to have this great sort of no-holes-barred sort of attitude. Like, a lot of people are very calculated and political, but you seem not to be afraid to pull a few punches.
No, I'm not really. You know, because, I mean, if anybody's really got a problem with what I have to say, they can always come and see me.
Right.
So I have no problem with that, but the thing is, I talk about things that are some real problems that some of the other people won't address or too afraid to.
Right.
I mean, you know, these opinions have consequences. You know, I don't get out of here unscathed.
No.
But by the same token, I find a lot of an example is the storyboard agents in Los Angeles. They combined the 10% commission, agent's commission,
yeah,
with a manager's commission. Now, there's different laws in different states. Like, maybe New York does it completely differently and they can do all that, but this is Los Angeles. But a law can only be enforced if someone makes a complaint. Well, there's not enough of them that will,
right,
make a complaint. So the same old bullshit, you know, continues on. And then when they whinge to me about it, I tell them, basically, if you don't like your agent doing this, then they shouldn't, because it is against the business laws here in Los Angeles.
Right.
All you need is five of you guys to go in there and say, we're not doing this.
Right.
And you're not getting that money.
Yeah.
And then they'd fold. But basically, they're all a bunch of cowards.
Right, yeah.
So they get ripped off. It's like being a prostitute with a pimp.
Right.
You know, and so
It's got to be tough sometimes working in the industry and having to watch your P's and Q's so often, even when you're monumentally frustrated.
Yeah, common sense kicks in, you know, but I've been working for a long time, and there are people that like me, they know me, I always deliver, you know, I like to say, you know, I make sure I put what you want on your pizza.
Right, yeah.
It's not my pizza, it's your pizza.
Yeah.
And so if you don't want any goddamn anchovies, don't give them to me.
Yeah.
And that's my job as a commercial artist. My job is to please the client. And there's a lot of artists that complain and go, well, it should be done like this. And I go, well, yeah, sometimes I think that way too, but they're paying me to do a job to their satisfaction.
Right.
So I have to, you know, I have to comply, otherwise they should get another artist that will do the job.
Yes.
So, you know, this isn't that Rourke in the Fountainhead.
No.
You know, this is that Ayn Rand,
yeah,
horseshit fiction book, you know. But, you know, if you pay for a service, you expect to get your money's worth. Otherwise, you feel ripped off. And I don't want anybody, whoever hires me, to feel ripped off.
Yeah.
And none of them have, so I'm pretty lucky like that.
Mm. And I mean, that could be said too. That could be said too for most people who are employed on a film anyway. I mean, the composer, the cinematographer, the whoever, you know.
Oh yeah. Well, it applies to any job in life.
Well,
whether you're
a
garbage man or a, you know, a cleaner or whatever. You know, you've got to do the job. And now it's funny. And actually, in this town, there are some artists that are making good money.
Sure.
And I got to tell you, man, they can't draw worth a flying fuck. and I'm surprised that they get hired at all.
Yeah.
You know.
That mystifies me.
I find, like, I was on one film called Ping Pong Rabbit. that, right. that got cancelled. It was for China.
Right.
And we had five people on that show.
Wow.
And I went to the producer, Bill Borden, who I worked with on La Bamba, and I said, Bill, what the fuck are you doing? These guys are wasting money. I can get you people
yeah.
that will do the work, that'll just blow you out of the water.
Yeah.
I mean, these people are just not doing their fucking job.
Right.
And I hate that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I work hard, and I know a lot of other artists who will bust a nut to do a good job, sure. and yet they hire these mucks because they can't tell the difference between a good drawing and a bad drawing.
Yeah.
You know, because it's really a matter of opinion.
Yeah.
If you like it, then it's a good drawing, but in storyboards, it's got to be functional.
Yeah, well, I mean,
you should... Yeah, go on, sorry.
Yeah, no, but I mean, because you're predominantly there that you work... when you do storyboards, you work directly with the director, unlike production illustration where you work as a team. That's true, right?
Yeah, well, see, I deliberately put myself in a position where I really only want to work for the director.
Okay, right.
Because production designers sometimes try to get in your ear and say, oh, well, you should do this and you should do that. And I know the director well enough that if I do that request that they want, then they're going to come and come after me. And I'm going, look, if you want that done, you go talk to the director. And if he says it's okay, then I'll draw it.
Right.
Otherwise, I'm not going to draw it. And because I'm not working for the art department, I'm working for the director. Mm. And really, it shields me because not too many people want to tell the director they don't like something.
Right.
So, you know, I get off scot-free. You know, it's like just roll the pigeon shit off the statue. You know, it's like right. that. yeah, you know, I've learned a few things. I've been at it for a long time, and like you said, I've always wanted to be a cartoonist. I'm actually drawing a new Professor Om story right now. I don't know if you're familiar with my comic book stuff or not, but a little bit.
Yeah. East meets West.
I did a comic strip.
Yeah.
For one of the Murdoch papers.
Right.
And I owned it, and Rupert Murdoch approved it. And,
right.
It was called Professor Om, and that led, and those samples from that Sunday strip led to me getting other film work, you know, and I was doing storyboards around Sydney,
right.
and doing album covers for EMI. I worked there, and you know, and I actually, in many ways, I wish I would have stayed at EMI because that was such a great gig.
Yeah.
Because you know, I've got a bit of a rock and roll heart. Was right in the thick of it, and
yeah.
Studio 301 was. Upstairs, you know, 301 Castle Ray Street, and I'd get to do some backup vocals and stuff and make some extra money and just have a good time up there. I kind of, when I left to go back into animation, I went, what have I done? This is boring. It's terrible.
Yeah.
But I just had to move on to the next gig. So,
oh, yeah.
You know,
and then, of course, you ended up in Hollywood, you know, with the fancy cars and the movie stars.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I ended up with the best cars. I mean, when I actually came out to Hollywood, I didn't drive.
All right. Yeah.
But I lived across the road from Universal, and I worked at Hanna-Barbera.
Right.
Because I worked for Bill Hanna in Australia, and I got him a bunch of artists. I got him an old Australian cartoonist, Hal English.
Mm.
You know, I turned him on to a bunch of other old 40s and 50s cartoonists who weren't doing a whole lot, and I got him jobs, and he couldn't believe it because he'd been searching for artists and couldn't find them.
Yeah.
And I was working at a place called Fred Kohlmeyer's in North Sydney, and I saw Bill Hanna just eating a sandwich, and I recognized him, of course, and we started talking, and he said, well, if you find me some artists, I'll give you a finder's fee. And I said, what's that? Because I'm 16 at this stage.
You're right, yeah.
And I'm going, what's a finder's fee?
Yeah.
And he says, well, if you get as an artist, we'll pay you some money. I said, oh, no, I don't want that. I said, I'll just give you these artists, you know. And then when I turned up out of the blue at Hanna-Barbera, I wasn't going to go there to work, but I was staying at Bill Stout's house. And he was the guy who worked on Conan and a bunch of other stuff.
Right, yeah.
I was staying at Bill Stout's house, and I was just going to come out here and box for 6 weeks, meet Jack Kirby, and go home.
Oh,
and
wow.
go and see Alex Toth. And go see Alex Toth as well, you know,
yeah.
since I worked with Alex in 73 at Eric Porter's doing Super Friends for Hanna-Barbera as a subcontract. So all these doors sort of opened. I already knew Mike Royer, so Toph was surprised by that. But getting these artists for Bill Hanna, I turn up at, you know, just to meet a bunch of people and say hello.
Yeah.
And then Bill Hanna sees me and says, Paul! And logically, I'm like, what? You know, because Bill Hanna didn't necessarily rub shoulders with everybody. He's a pretty busy guy.
Right.
So he shouts out my name, so everyone's kind of shocked by that.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, g'day, Bill.
Yeah.
And then he said, are you working for us? I went, well, no, I just came here to say hello to the boys. And he said, listen, if you want to work here, start right now. I went, all right. And he said, we'll have your green card in 3 weeks.
Right.
But you can start right now. So I did. I sat down and started working on Godzilla. Happened that quick.
Yeah.
Same thing happened with Cheech and Chong, you know. Yeah. But that was around the corner, so I could jog to work.
Right.
And then I worked for Cheech and Chong, and I was working out at Vince's gym, a very famous bodybuilding gym in California at the time. And I ran into Cheech and Chong, and I'd done some work for them in Sydney that I got ripped off for, but they made up for it. And it was just across the street, so I didn't even have to drive.
Wow.
Which is crazy, because in this town, if you come to this town, if you do not drive, you're dead in the water.
Right.
They don't have a transportation system like we have in Sydney or Melbourne or anywhere else.
Right.
Or in Europe. It's pretty shitty.
Wow. Geez, you think... you think for such a sprawling city, they'd have trains or buses at least.
Yeah, especially when you think about the railroad came from the east to the west.
Yeah.
But then they cut it all out. It's really, really stupid. So now they're spending a fortune in putting a railway line in.
Okay.
Actually, one station went right through where I lived across the road from Universal.
Right.
So there you go. But anyway.
I wanted to go through and talk to you about not all of your movies. So I just picked out a few at random that are some favourites of mine. And I'd be remiss not to start with my wife's favourite film, which is The Goonies. And working with Richard Donner, what was that experience like?
Oh, Dick Donner was great. Yeah. I really enjoyed working with Dick, because when I went in to see him, his production office looked like a really plush living room, you know, it was very, very comfortable.
Mm.
And he showed me the 2-page letter he got from Marlon Brando, because Brandon got, what did he get at that time, $1 million or $2 million for that role as Jor-El?
I think it was $3 million for a week's work or something like that.
Yeah, it was mentioned in there. I think it was $2 million, but it's still a lot of money.
Yeah.
And now, you know, it's $24 million that The Rock gets, so, you know, it goes to show how much money it's really given Hollywood. It's a lot.
No, I reckon, yeah.
But, Goonies was great fun. I got onto it because of Ed Varro. He showed my stuff to Spielberg, and I had been working on my science project over at Disney. And then the next job I got was Goonies, and I designed the logo. I picked, I suggested John Matuszak.
No.
As Sloth, and I designed the head for Sloth and all that.
Right.
And what else did I do? Yeah, I did a whole bunch of stuff on there, and I mainly worked with a great guy named Sherman Lavick.
Right.
Who was fantastic. He's passed away. We did about 5 films together.
Right.
And he was fantastic. But
Well, I mean, you obviously you sit and work with when you're a storyboard artist, not you work very close with the director. So were you on set at all? Were you there where the action was all happening and all that sort of thing, or were you?
Well, I turned up to the set a couple of times. I didn't go to the set too often. They had a wonderful pirate ship that they made with all the doubloons and everything.
Right. Everyone was coming down to check that out. Michael Jackson and everybody wanted to.
Michael Jackson even came down to check out when we were working on the Flintstones.
Oh, okay, really?
That was fun.
Wow.
Yeah. Actually, I got a job on the TV show Bob, where Bob Newhart played a cartoonist. And I was on the show in the background, had a couple of lines in it, I'd be drawing cartoons or birthday cards for anybody on the set that had a birthday. That's what I mainly did.
I saw you in the rundown as well, or Welcome to the Jungle as he was came here.
Oh yeah.
I thought that looks like Paul Power, is it?
Yeah,
And
I got that job because Peter Berg, we were having lunch, and Peter Berg, where we were, was a production office and sound studio all in one.
Mm.
And Peter Berg had this gun, this very interesting gun. I went, what sort of thing is that? And I just grabbed it and aimed it, you know. And he said, hey, Power Pack, can you, because that's what he called me. He said, hey, Power Pack, can you act? And I said, of course I can fucking act. And so he took me out, so I took some photos, and Tom Duffield, the production designer, took some shots, and I did some things as that character, and you know, Berg had seen me work out there, because The Rock had all of his workout equipment, so I took full advantage of that, and occasionally a couple of the guys would do some grappling, because I do judo and grappling with Judo Jim LaBelle, quite a famous guy, taught grappling to Bruce Lee way back in the day. So, and the thing is, Judo Jim LaBelle, you can go to my website, paulpower.com, and see photos of Gene with The Rock and myself and all that. But Gene had wrestled The Rock's father and grandfather, because he was a pro wrestler as well.
Yeah, because they're East from
my life. That's how I got that job. Yeah. You know, and I did study acting. You know, I used to for fun box over at the university that's towards is it on Anzac Parade? Shit, it's a long time ago. Near Randwick, the university over there.
All right, yeah.
And across the street. And across the street was NIDA.
Yeah.
And friends of mine would act at NIDA, and I would go over and just sneak into classes.
Right.
And join. I never paid for them. I just went in, and they knew it. I was up to play any part they wanted. Always the toughest parts for me to play were poofs, and you know, it's very hard for me to play those sort of parts. But you know, when you're acting, you've got to just give yourself up.
That's right. Yeah. You know, yeah, you've got to leave your inhibitions at the door, as they say.
Yeah, just thank God it wasn't X-rated. I wouldn't have been into it. I took acting lessons to become a better cartoonist, to get more in tune with the human condition.
Yes.
And actually, in taking acting class, for me, it was more like therapy.
Right.
Boy, some of the stuff you had to do was really tough. I don't know if you've done any acting things they ask you to do, you go, oh. It is all about letting go.
It is. And I mean a lot of professionals in the film business do recommend to newcomers to take acting. I think George Miller, most famously, when he was up at a Q&A once, and they asked him what makes for a good director. And he said, knowing how actors work, and George Miller himself was a proponent, he said, I went to acting classes as well, because he said, I wanted to know what the actors go through in order to direct them better.
Yes.
So if it's good enough for Dr. George, and if it's good enough for Paul Power, then it should be good enough for anyone.
Yeah, and I like George. George is a great guy. I really like George. Great fun. He was probably the real first guy to put in real comic book action in his films.
Yes, certainly. Yeah, so. Certainly with Mad Max and all that, and certainly with Fury Road recently, which was...
Yeah, Mad Max 2, that was not a corker, that was.
Oh, mate.
Yeah, but with Goonies, with Dick Donner, he just said, look, just draw it, and if I like it, I shoot it, and if I don't like it, I won't shoot it. Yeah. I went, oh, okay, to interpret the script the way I wanted, and I pretty much stick to what's in the script, but if I can, I try and plus something. But I let them know that's an ad. They can see that too, and they're free to listen. They're free to use any of my work or toss it out.
Something I wanted to ask you is you know how I mean the script is constantly changing on these big movies. Is it a pain in the ass for you? I mean, you get a version of the script and you start your work, and then at some point they change it. Do you have to then redo stuff to compensate for
Change? Well, the only film where I got really frustrated like that was working with Warren Beatty on Love Affair.
Okay.
And I said, look, man, I'll draw whatever you want, but I need a break. Can you give me a different scene? Because I've been drawing this whole scene that happens in the first class cockpit, and I know you really want to get this done, but just give me a couple of days on some other scene, I'll come back and I'll be more fresh, because I was running out of ideas.
Yeah.
And I saw Warren recently, and he said, oh, no, we have to work together again. And I forgot that They actually fired me off that film.
Right.
And I went over and worked on Lois and Clark. And we were at Warner Brothers, and they were on the stage right across from the stage we were on.
Right.
So I'd run into him and said, you're not mad at me? And they go, no, I'm not mad at you. It's okay. I mean, if you don't like the work, you know, I'm gone. You know, you should keep people around. You don't like the work. It doesn't matter.
No.
He said, no, I do like your work. Would you come back? I said, no, I'm working on Superman. Until I left. And I was having a great time with everybody. And I was in one of those episodes, too.
Oh, you were? Okay.
Yeah, I played a bionic boxer.
Oh, well, there
you go. So it was, it was fun, you know. I would just bounce from film to film.
Yeah.
And, you know, really, it's, if you do a good job, then you keep working. But I did get burnout. I did get to a level where I went, oh, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
But which was tough because the money's good.
Yes.
But if you burn out, you're no good to anybody. So.
Yeah. You mentioned My Science Project back there.
Yeah.
Jonathan. Oh, geez, I can't.
Betchel.
Betchel is how you pronounce it, okay?
Yeah.
Betchel.
Yeah.
Now, he directed that, but you worked on another film where he was solely the writer, and that was The Last Starfighter, which has always been a favourite of mine.
Oh, yeah. Because
I remember
Oh, sorry, go on.
No, because I remember seeing you. You're on the... they did a small sort of retrospective documentary on The Last Starfighter, and you're in it.
Yeah, because we were actually working on a sequel at that time.
Right.
And they asked me to be on it, and I said, well, I didn't do any work on it.
Right.
No, but you're working on the new one. You talk about it from a storyboard artist's perspective. So I just gave my opinion that I felt that, what's his name, that actor? Oh, God, he's a great actor. He's in Victor Victoria. Robert Preston.
Robert Preston,
And I said, oh, Robert Preston to me was kind of like an American Doctor Who, the way he was dressed and everything.
Right. You didn't actually work on The Last Starfighter. You were working on a...
No, I was working on a sequel that was happening 30 years later.
Okay, wow. Because I remember seeing that, and I was looking through your credits, and I thought, I don't see The Last Starfighter.
No, because that film was coming out, was about to come out, and I was working with John Betchel on My Science Project.
Right.
That's where I first met Nick Castle as well. Nick was great. You never know in this business. You run into somebody, and then 20 years later, they go, do you want to work for me? And I go, well, yeah. You know,
why not?
You know, out of sight, out of mind. I just ran into David Mamet, people, at McCabe's. It's a nice little music place in Santa Monica.
Yeah, and you did work on The Edge that he wrote.
Yes. Yeah, we talked about that. We also talked about grappling because he's a grappler. He does jiu-jitsu.
Is he really?
And, you know, I do that too. He did that film, Red Belt, his name? Edgewell Chittifor or whatever. I never get his name right, but he's a brilliant black actor.
Right, yeah.
And that film, I don't know if you've seen it, but it's great.
Yeah.
You have?
Yeah.
Seen it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I told him, I said, whenever I see that second hand, I pick it up, and I send it to my friends in Australia and Britain, wherever, other cartoonists. I said, here, look at this. This is the best martial art film because it's a real one, you know.
Yeah, it's really
and,
good.
I just loved it. So I don't know. Maybe I'll get to work with him. But we had a nice little conversation, and then I went, well, listen, we better get our seat. The concert's about to start, you know.
Yeah.
But it was great fun.
Yeah.
It was great fun talking to him.
Because
that just happened a few days ago. So
yeah, he seems like such a mild-mannered guy. I didn't realise he was into the old kung fu.
Oh, yeah, he's a rock-solid guy, you know.
Yeah.
He's a real nuggety guy.
Yeah.
He's about 5'7", I think. I'm only 5'1".
Right.
You know, and he looked at me and said, yeah, you got the shoulders for it. I said, oh, yeah, I've been doing this stuff for 25 years, so yeah. Kind of fun, but so we were mainly talking about grappling.
I really loved The
great
Edge.
Guy.
The Edge was a great movie, and you worked with Lee Tomahori in that.
Yeah, Lee Tomahori. Yeah,
Tomahori. Yeah, but he was.
Or as David Blythe, director in New Zealand, says, Lee Tamamari.
Tamamari.
Now Lee was great. I did a bunch of films with him, but we had a slight falling out, but. That'll rectify itself. So
yeah,
that's okay. But he was a mad keen comic book fan.
Too. He was? Oh, okay. Right.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Big Jack Kirby fan and fan of Bernie Wrightson. I mean, Lee can draw. he's a good drawer.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so it was when we work together, he'll rough out stuff and then on a wall, you know, and then I quickly sketch it out and then, you know, then I'm free to add to it. But boy, he's a fast thinking director. He's really he's really good. I've got quite a soft spot for Lee. He's a good bloke, even though we made that short. We'll fix that later.
But I mean, that was a great film, and you got to work. They had Tony Hopkins. You eventually worked with Tony again on a movie that he wrote and directed, which was Slipstream.
Yeah, very trippy film.
Yeah.
What's it called?
Slipstream.
Slipstream. And there was another film called Slipstream that was quite good that Mark Hamill was in.
That's right.
With Bill Paxton and Sean Guy directed it.
Yeah. Oh, it's terrible, isn't it?
Lisberger. Steven Lisberger.
Yeah.
Yeah. He and I were always going to work together, but it didn't quite happen. But
okay. He's right out of the business now, isn't he? I heard he makes boats or something.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't seen him in ages, but he was a big comic book fan too. And then when they did the sequel to Tron, I went, son of a bitch, why didn't they just finish the story?
Yeah.
You got two stories with no endings, two Tron movies with no endings. I hate that. You know, I always say to people, if you're going to make a movie and you want to make it a franchise, finish that story, and then you can lead into something else.
Exactly.
But finish that story. Don't leave them hanging, because we may never see. And I say the same thing about TV series. You know, people like to have a cliffhanger. And go, no, just finish that fucking story. Mm. Please your fans, and then give a hint at the next story to come. So, otherwise, I think it's a horrible letdown. They do that all the time, and I think it's such bullshit. You know, you're cheating the viewer.
Mm.
You know, if a job's over, it's over. But finish it. You know, just finish it and move on to something else.
So what was Tony Hopkins like working as? I mean, he's a fantastic actor. What was he like as a director?
Oh, he was good. He was great. He was good. I was supposed to act in that film too.
Okay.
But I was on a job in working on a game about puppy dogs of all things with Jim Mitchell. We were doing this job in what's it called, Worcester in Boston.
Right.
And I think I got that name right, but anyway. And then Tony called me and said, look, if you want to act, come on back. And I flew back, but I missed my flight, got locked in LaGuardia, and was quite strange, and ended up at the sushi bar. It was weird. And I was drawing cartoons of people. They'd buy me sushi. And I'm watching the people from this flight get moved from different terminals. And the woman at the sushi counter said, look, don't do that. They do this all the time to make sure they don't get upset. So they deliberately move people around. She says, well, let you know. And we were back at the same place. But I was reading My Wicked, Wicked Ways by the unabridged version by Errol Flynn, which is a great book.
Right.
Then I get a call from Tommy Chong. He wanted to work together again. Then I had to call Tony and tell him, look, man, I'm not gonna make it. I'm stuck at LaGuardia. I'll never make it back in time.
Right.
He said, oh, don't worry, Paul. There'll be another time. And I go, yeah, right. You know, maybe there will. Tony's a good guy. He's got a wicked sense of humor.
I can imagine.
Oh, God, no, he tells a wicked joke. Oh, I said, Tony, you've got to do a full-on comedy.
Yeah.
Nobody knows this about you. You're a funny bastard.
And a big
Captain Marvel fan.
Really?
Of the old Captain Marvel. That's why he hired me.
Right.
He thought my stuff reminded him of the old 1940s Captain Marvel comics that he read in 1948. He had pleurisy in it.
Yeah.
A friend of his dad was a merchant marine. He'd bring back all these American comic books.
Oh, that's great.
And Tony liked that. So, he was a great guy to work for. So, such fun. Such a generous guy.
I've got a burning question about Anthony Hopkins that I've always wanted to know, and since you've met him a couple of times, does he have really big hands, or is it just me?
No, he's got big hands, yeah.
He looks like he's got really big hands.
He's got pretty big, strong hands.
Because he's a piano player.
He's a composer as well.
Yeah, because I noticed whenever he does a scene, especially with an actress, his hands just swallow. You know, it. I said, geez, look at this one. He's got mass, you know, I mean, I feel like William Goldman. Did you ever hear the story about William Goldman? Was at, he was at some hotel in Europe somewhere, and he saw Sylvester Stallone heading for the pool.
Right.
And so William Goldman was always obsessed with how short movie stars actually are, right? They're not,
yeah.
They're not as big as they are on the big screen, obviously. So.
Well, that's why they like me.
Yeah. So he followed him down to the pool, and so you can imagine Sly's down one end and Bill Goldman's down the other, and so he's waiting specifically to try and get out of the pool at exactly the same time so he can stand next to Sly and towel off to see how tall Sly Stallone actually is. And he isn't very tall, really. He's actually quite a short man.
He's about 5 foot 8 maximum.
Yeah, because yeah, I think Bill was about 6'2" or something like that, so he was,
yeah, but I'd rather be built by Sly Stallone than William Goldman.
Well, that's true. In a fight,
I mean, if you want to get out and compare physiques, all right. If you want to get out and say, well, I'm taller.
Yeah.
Well, who cares? A lot of people are. But are you built like this guy? No, yeah. Fuck no.
No, that's true.
Who would your missus rather go to bed with, William Goldman or Stallone? There you go. So William Goldman can go and get fucked.
Yeah. Yeah. Who's got the bigger Oscar? but, yeah. Well, they both got Oscars, so I suppose it doesn't really matter. It'll come down to perception.
Yeah.
It'll come down.
No, I don't think Spy worries too much about that, really. I've met him a couple of times, and
yeah. He's
pretty good. His brother's taller. I think his brother's about 6'1 or 6'2". So,
but, you know. Yeah, one of the last films I wanted to talk to you about, which is a favourite of mine, it kind of disappeared over here. It didn't get a massive release. It was directed by Stephen Sommers, who would go on to very big things with his Mummy movies. The film he directed before that was...
I did the Mummy for him.
Yeah, I know you did those, but this one came before those. It was a movie called Deep Rising.
Oh, yeah. I did some work on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that, I thought that was a terrific movie. It kind of, like I said, it disappeared over here in Australia. I think it was straight to video over here, but it was.
It disappeared.
Oh, it disappeared
but
there
the
as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, because I mean, I thought it was a great sort of action comedy monster. You know, I thought it had a good blend of all the elements.
Well, I'll tell him next time I see him. He'll be pleased.
Yeah. No, I thought that was really like I always show people that movie. I thought it's a real missed opportunity because it was funny, it was scary, it was, you know, there was action.
He's a good filmmaker. You know, it's funny. You really can't tell. I used to think I was able to pick him. You know, work on a film, go, yeah, this is going to be a hit. You just don't know anymore. There's been many a film I've worked on or other films I've seen, I went, boy, that was great. And it just didn't do anything. You just go, what happened? Mm. But some of these films get discovered, you know, years later.
Yeah.
And people discover them.
Yeah.
But you find at the time, some of the films that you've liked, even classic films, you'll find they died in the ass at the box office. Yet 30 years later, they're hits.
No. I mean, when you're working on them, like you just said, like for instance, I know you worked on Predator as well, but did it feel like, you know, something like Predator when it was being developed seemed very simple, and yet it's regarded as such a great film today. What was it like then, like when you were working on it? Did it feel like something that was?
When I came on Predator, I didn't realize it, but I was pretty hot stuff in town. I was just happy to be working.
Yeah.
So I was kind of clueless. I could have asked for more money, and I didn't. I was just happy to be working.
Yeah.
And that film was in trouble. 20th Century Fox, I was friends with the head of production of 20th Century Fox, and he put me onto a bunch of films, and they also knew that I was a good story man. Right? If there was a problem, I could fix things.
Right.
Or at least head up a session to get people thinking in another way about a scene or whatever.
Right.
And that comes from writing my own comic strips and doing, you know, other stuff. But and not being a wallflower. But on Predator, that third act, that's all mine.
Really?
Some of that's in the script, but not a lot of it.
Right.
The whole third act is mine. I wrote that.
Wow.
And drew that in the board, and my whole concept was to draw Arnold as Tarzan,
right?
And And when they want to kill off the creature, the hunter, as they called him originally, they had done another concept for it, which was kind of like a guy, was kind of like a praying mantis,
right.
Like a human figure, but had like legs like Pan, you know.
Right.
And I wasn't privy. They wouldn't show me any of that stuff because they didn't want me to be influenced. I went, well, fine. And so I drew Arnold as Tarzan because I met Arnold a long, long time ago.
Right.
And I told him, you know, back in 72 and 74, met him in Sydney.
Right.
Because my brother was a bodybuilder as well, so.
Right.
And I knew Robert Nalen and Paul Graham and all those guys.
Right.
And we were in a pub in Sydney, and I said, Arnold, you should play Tarzan. He said, boy, I would make a wonderful Tarzan. I said, yeah, but you got to get rid of that accent. He said, what accent? and actually, Arnold was the biggest help to me on Predator. He was the one who really gave me any sort of insight because I did a real knockdown, drag out fight, you know.
Right.
And Arnold said, boy, these drawings are wonderful. The guy and the man, he is a monster. He would kick my ass. And I went, oh, okay. And I went, all right, so I had to change that. But he was, because the director, he was constantly being berated by Joel Silver,
right.
John McTiernan.
Poor guy.
Oh, it was horrible. It was like being in a high school in the 60s and the headmaster berating you after he's given you the cane
right.
six times. It was like that. It was really kind of painful to watch. I'm like, oh, I've got to leave. You know.
Yeah.
I've been a witness to some things like that. Very uncomfortable. But
yeah.
You're there, you know, you're there with the artwork. You've got to show these people, so you're just a witness.
Yeah.
And you're just there going, oh, I hope to Christ they don't punch each other, shit.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean,
it gets heated.
Yeah, I've heard you tell the story that Spielberg and Donna had a bit of a falling out, and then Dick Donna took off.
Oh, yeah, that was something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was right there. Boy, that was something.
Yeah.
I thought Dick Donna was going to punch him.
Yeah.
I really did.
Ooh.
And he left, and then Spielberg ended up directing the sequence that I did, which was about where Chunk gets thrown in the back of the Cadillac or whatever it is, and there's a dead body there.
Yeah.
So I did that. That's very Three Stooges. That's what I do all the time.
Yeah.
Look, with Predator, I killed him off with a Roadrunner gag.
Okay.
I mean, I treated it seriously.
Yeah.
So when you look at it, if you look at it, you go, oh, shit. Yeah, because when you see that film, you'll go, I know this.
Right.
Why do I know this? You know, there's something.
Yeah, Roadrunner.
So,
yeah.
That's what I played on, and it worked. The other thing I did in regards to Predator at night,
yeah.
I was working with Julian Temple on Earth Girls Are Easy.
Okay.
And I was so tired, I drew the same opening sequence in both movies.
All right.
But luckily, Earth Girls Are Easy got delayed and didn't get released for another year.
Right.
But they were originally supposed to come out at the same time, and I went, oh, I'm going to be toast.
Right.
Because the reviewers were going to say, both of these movies have the same opening. And then they would have found that fucking Paul Powery drew that. So, yeah. But anyway.
So, Paul, what are you doing lately when you're not doing Arnold Schwarzenegger impersonation?
Well, you know, I've always worked out, so I enjoy doing that.
Yeah.
I'm writing at the moment. I've been working on three scripts, bouncing back and forth on three scripts.
Okay.
And, And so I've been working on that, and then I'm doing this Professor Om story. I'm going to do one more comic book.
Right.
I do this comic book, East Meets West.
Yes.
And so I'm going to do a Professor Om special, and I've got this story I'm drawing called Hunter.
Right.
And it's my character, Professor Om, being very, very nasty.
Ooh.
He's never been this... But it's a revenge tale, and that's all I'm going to tell you, but it's a good one.
That's right.
And Brett Blevins, I don't know if you know who he is, but Brett Blevins is a very good cartoonist in Arizona, so he's gonna ink it. So I'm out to draw as best I can,
right.
And I don't know, it might be the last comic story I draw for a long time, but I just finished doing some production sketches for a gangster movie,
okay.
Which these guys are doing. And in January, I'm working with John Romita Jr. We're going to direct another short film. I did one before, I Just Draw, which a lot of Little River Band guys did music for me on the film, which was terrific. And a lot of my muso mates came to my aid. And so this time we're gonna do another short film. And hey man, it's like whoever calls me and they can pay my fee, have pencil, will travel.
Yeah, you know? Totally. And the scripts that you're writing, what are they, action, science fiction?
One was a script that was intended for Cheech and Chong, and then and then Tommy Chong wanted to it didn't work out with Tommy. I've known Tommy for like 40 years, but I said, listen, I wrote this so Tommy wouldn't have any ownership.
Right.
But it's a stoner heist comedy.
Oh, there you go.
I got some other people interested in that. I went, great, you know. And who knows, we might end up hiring Cheech and Chong anyway, so we'll see.
Why not?
But the other one is a adaptation of East Meets West, the whole graphic novel.
Okay,
so
cool.
I'm finishing that up.
Yeah,
and then one is a biography of I don't want to tell you who the guy is, but he created some stuff that affected a lot of people.
Right.
And but he led a very adventurous life.
Right.
So I've been doing that one with another guy, Gordon Lavelle. So I'm doing a rewrite on that.
Wow.
And hopefully get that under Taylor Hackford's nose, because Taylor has expressed some interest in it.
Ooh.
So I've been shifting gears mainly to write.
Yeah.
And since I make so many mistakes, I make sure I have a copy editor and a proofreader. You know, and I just dive in.
Well, mate,
so,
you're well entrenched there. You're well entrenched there. You know, you're one of those people that know people. So I'm pretty sure you'll come out all right eventually.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's fun. It's fun doing this stuff. But by the same token, you know, it's like this, like anything in life. If you don't have a go, if you don't at least try it or make a solid attempt, nothing's going to happen. So you just got to get off your ass, or in some case, sit on your ass and do the work.
Yeah, well,
that's all.
That's
you just got to make yourself do it.
That's right.
And see, Paul McCartney has a great saying, and it really is his key to success.
Right.
And what it is he says, do it now. And I go, oh, shit, that's good.
Yeah.
Now, don't put it off. I mean, listen, if you're going to sit down and watch TV for 2 hours, why don't you just turn this fucking TV off and get the work done?
That's true.
And then you can watch TV.
Yeah.
Or turn the bloody TV off and go to the gym and work out.
Yeah.
Or go for a walk around the block.
Yeah.
You know? So when people say they don't have time to do things, I'm like, well, you better have a family member on their fucking deathbed, because there's 24 hours in the day, and I'm sure there's a couple of hours you can put in there. And really, that's it. You only have to put in like 2 hours a day if you've got a project you've been wanting to do, and you just do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't answer the phone. You know, you just let everybody know. Well, for this 2 hours, I'm, you know, leave me alone. And you get the work done. And you'll be amazed. You'll be amazed how much fucking work you can get done just by committing 2 hours.
Totally.
This is on personal projects.
Yeah.
Because everybody, most people are goddamn lazy.
Yes.
And I'm not.
Right.
So, you know, and before you know it, life's over. And I want to make sure I get this stuff done before I kick the bucket.
Yeah.
And then what happens after that, I could give a shit, because I won't know.
It won't bother you then, because you won't be around.
I just don't want to be treated like Sam Kinison. You know that Sam Kinison thing where he's dead and he still has consciousness, and the guy in the funeral parlor buggers him and all. It's terrible. It's one of the funniest bits I've ever heard. And I worked with him on a film. I worked with him on Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield.
Right.
Those guys, they cracked me up. I was nearly throwing up. They made me laugh so much I couldn't take it. I just, thought, oh, give me some air. I'm
going to
die.
Yeah.
I was so,
well, yeah. I've got to say, Paul, you've done a pretty good job of that for me this afternoon. I was just going to wrap it up and thank you. Thank you for giving us your time on podcasting them softly. You've been a great font of great stories, and it's been a real pleasure. I know you've got problems with your floor over there. I was going to say I'll let you get back and get that floor fixed.
Oh, yeah. Now, my house, I've got to get... Yeah, we had a little bit of a flood. That was not fun. A little bit of Texas and Florida in Pacoima. Mm. But that's okay. Yeah. Just had to throw some artwork out. That was painful.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, you know, shit happens.
Yeah. Now that I've got your phone number, next time I'm in Los Angeles, I'll give you a ring and we'll have a beer, eh? Have a 4X.
Sure.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Well, you drink the beer, I'll drink the wine. I always have beer in the fridge. Right. I like what it does for people,
okay.
But I can't stand beer.
Really? Oh,
I just
okay.
can't drink it. Yeah.
Right.
But I like to have it around because it makes okay. people happy. So, yeah. You know, it's okay.
Well, in Queensland, mate, we're 4X drinkers here, so I'll...
I got some family up there, so... Yeah, that's good.
Well,
I got family everywhere, Jesus. All right, well, listen...
Yep.
Well, this has been good. I hope whoever listens to this finds it entertaining. Okay. And if they don't, we'll change the channel.
Yeah, too bad. I'm sad. You're glad. That's yeah. All right, Paul.
All right, then.
Have a good day, mate.
All right, thanks. See you later.
Cheerio, mate.